and welcome to the second season of Seniors in the Building. We are four friends exploring aspects of aging together. Our conversations run the gamut from humorous to serious to maybe outrageous. We hope to hear from new voices this year as we invite guests into our conversations. Thanks for being with us. Hi, welcome to Seniors in the Building. I'm Signe.
I'm Jack.
I'm Elaine.
And I'm Rick. Hello. Today we're going to attack a topic that I find really pushes my buttons a lot. And some of that pushing the buttons comes from a lot of this political conversation that goes flying around relating to our economy, our politics, our government, our social systems, and so on. And that is when certain, you might call populist or extremist speakers and podcasters and politicians talk about everything is broken, everything is damaged, nothing is fixable, everything is corrupt. And you hear that so much these days. And I want to sort of delve into, is that really true? Or is that some kind of manipulative talk, over-exaggeration to instill fear and to instill a lot of negativity and hopelessness in our system? So my sense is that kind of phrasing just drives me crazy. It's filled with red flags. And I just would like to have us examine this a bit to see where we get to.
Well, let me jump in there, because there is a danger in the totalizing of positivity as well. And so the truth probably lies somewhere that not everything is broken, but many things are broken. Mm-hmm. And that tends to be my psychological and disposition.
Yeah.
And the things are far more complex in terms of talking about any particular problem than we often have tolerance for. So it's not that, so complexity as an academic is where I'm always at. Mm-hmm. But that can be a cop-out too, in terms of taking action against anything.
Well, you know, Jack, I wouldn't disagree with you. I guess maybe my reaction to that everything is broken kind of approach is that nothing is repairable, nothing is fixable. Mm-hmm. And that often the only simple answer, and this goes against what I think you're saying about complexity, the only simple answer is to tear it all down, to trash the whole system, and then to build something new. But often they're not even sure what they're building. And some of that is a simplistic answer to very complex matters. Yeah, there is a lot that's broken. I'm not trying to deny that, although it may sound that way. So,
My mind went to sort of where you were getting to or alluded to, Rick, in that things are... I come from a family where my dad fixed everything. Mm-hmm. If something broke in our house, he would either make the part or jury-rig something so that it was fixed. Mm-hmm. And so I come into the world sort of with that mentality. And so anything that breaks at our house, I am looking for a way to try to fix it before I either call whoever mm-hmm. I need to help or replace something. Mm-hmm. And so when I go from that sort of particular fixing something, and fixing something that is broken is possible. Mm-hmm. You can make a new part and fit that new part in there, and to attacking problems that you face as there's my famous saying is there's always a way. Mm-hmm. There's always a way through this, and so the, you know, the whole everything is broken thing, I kind of react the same way you do. That's red flag for me. That is totally, totally sort of over the board. If somebody said to me once, there's the worst case scenario, best case scenario, and what is most likely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so I always think about, okay, what is, if I'm hearing worst case scenario, doomsday language, I'm thinking, what is most likely here? And that's, I think, starts my critical thinking process about stuff when I'm hearing those extreme views on everything is broken, we've got to fix it. It's like an excuse to to get rid of what they don't like.
Yes, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Instead of working with it and making it better. Yeah. I don't know what I'm saying.
No, that sounds good.
But it started with thinking about my dad, who was always able to fix something.
Well, and that was true with my father's trucking business. And I still recall the one year where I did quite a bit of work for him. And sometimes with some of the older trucks, there would be a fair bit that would break. And the odd time a truck driver would come in after a frustrating day and just, this truck is garbage. We should just burn it or throw it in the dump and it's useless.
Get rid of it.
And sometimes, like one time, I remember a particular guy coming in and water is streaming out of the bottom of the cab of his truck, and he is just so frustrated. And actually, it was a ruptured hose and a bit of a repair in the heater radiator for the cab. And it took an hour or so to fix it all, but then it was great. And all of a sudden, well, he thought I was a mechanical genius after that, which I still try to carry
to this day. Hold that image,
yeah, hold that image, yeah. But in fact, it was not
so
all
broken.
You're
a fixer, too. Like, you fix things.
Right. Oh, yes.
Oh,
over
yeah.
the years, yeah, I've been wash machines, dryers.
Go in and try to find the problem. And
yeah, dude, that's the number one go-to, you know. And then if that doesn't work, get a repair person in. And if that doesn't work, then you might have to replace it. But
on the other side of things, though, to say that everything is repairable is a totalizing tendency and just not true. And so there are thinkers in the arena of doomerism when it comes to climate change who argue that there's some utility perhaps in recognizing that the climate deterioration is not fixable. Mm-hmm. And we need to start adjusting that, therefore, to a different climatic regime in order to save human civilization. And that sounds extravagant, right? Saving human civilization. But we have to remember that human civilization emerged in a very narrow window of climatic possibility. Mm-hmm. And that we could be closing that window, and that's catastrophic.
Yeah.
Beyond fixability. And we're going to see, I think, as the future unfolds, probably not for us, but for our children's children, how it is that these efforts to fix it, like taking carbon out of the CO2 out of the air, mm-hmm. is just not possible at the volume required to ameliorate the increase.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that when we say things about some things are not repairable, I also, I'm not saying this as being a doomsday or anything like that, but there always has to be something like a phoenix rising from the ashes of something, right?
Oh, good point.
So there always has to, you know, it doesn't always have to be that way, but there are possibilities there. So even though something might be completely destroyed or taken apart or broken or taken down or whatever, it might not be resurrected in the same way, right? In the same form, right?
Like parts of the truck could be utilized elsewhere,
right,
for example.
That's right. Yeah. People sell their trucks for parts, right? Yeah. And that's what you can do, right? So in some ways, that there is still a working towards that brokenness, but maybe not accomplishing the absolute for it.
So the question, I guess, is how do we then, in the midst of doomerism, whether it be political, everything's broken, or whatever, retrieve and respond in some ways that are more positive and constructive with tiny, tiny glimmers of hope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things that I was reading is that one of the ways is to never give up on fact checking.
Yeah, no kidding.
Which counters the totalizing tendencies, especially in politics. And I know CBC does it, CNN tries to do it, but in rather a weak fashion, I think, they could do more of that. Mm-hmm. Rather than say that is an outright lie, they're not very strong in the saying of that, and they should be. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the ways to combat totalizing negativity, which is a precursor to totalitarianism. If everything's broken, there's only one person who can fix it.
Mm-hmm.
At least that's the assumption that people make. And we need to change everything, the entire system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not sure where this statement came from, but I'm going to share this one. Psychologically, despair generalizes. It sees everything through the same dark lens. Hope particularizes. It notices small evidences of renewal and attends to them with care.
Yeah.
And I think maybe that's what you're saying,
yeah.
Jack, right?
Small
is that
evidences.
Small evidences of renewal are evident, and that's where the work gets done, right?
So when it comes to climate change, for example, heavens forbid that one would draw on the small evidence of renewal that China is going through in terms of its alternative energy revolution.
Yeah.
Now that's counter to all the ideology or the anti-Chinese ideology. And they do burn an immense amount of coal, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But they're at least a superpower trying to make the shift. And we ought not to let their EV cars, and I say this facetiously, into Canada or the United States. God forbid.
Mm-hmm. So I think back to what you were saying, Elaine, one of my personal experience of continually, and I think I'm a person that's always looked at those small evidences of renewal and hope, mm-hmm. and tried to bring them to the fore and to raise them up as indicators of something different than this wholesale sort of despair and mm-hmm. saying everything is broken, and have often been dismissed for that as
being Pollyanna.
Yeah. And I don't ever believe that I have been Pollyanna in my views. I always have tried to do what you said, Jack, and do my fact checking and do the research around what's there. Like both the evidence for despair and the evidence for hope. And again, that whole worst case, best case, what's most likely,
yeah.
mm-hmm. road, mm-hmm. Is where I've gone. But I have to say, I've as someone who has always tried to do that, I've felt dismissed quite often.
Yeah.
And I think that is exactly what's happening with this, with what you're, this everything is broken thing that you're reacting to, Rick, is that it's a total denying of those other things that are going on,
yeah.
and
yeah.
a need to generalize and say it's all broken.
Yeah, just tear it all apart.
Blow it all up. Get rid of it. Yeah, blow it up. Exactly.
Yeah. Well, I guess my thought is that critical thinking, you know, when you use
yes,
terms fact-checking,
exactly.
I think that really plays in and say, for example, of climate change, the critical thinking and the fact-checking would lead us to say, well, maybe it's not repairable, as in we can't bring it back to the way it was
yeah.
100 years ago. But the critical thinking then can also lead us to say, like you say, alternative approaches to adaptability or to adjustment so that we can still have a healthy life and also not repeat this or not just keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
And just buy into, well, there's nothing we can do, so let's just, you know, it's like the house is burning down, there's nothing we can do, so don't bother calling the fire department, because it's gone anyways.
That let's run out and let it burn.
Let it burn, yeah.
No,
yeah.
Instead of trying to stop it in its tracks and preventing further damage.
Further damage, yeah, exactly.
So small ameliorative steps are possible.
Sure, and I think that works on many different levels. One example, years ago, I came across a bit of an article that pointed out that in relationships, often small changes can make large differences. And I remember talking when I did some marriage counseling or therapy with couples to try and bring that forward. And when the light went on in their head, and they began to sort of identify the particulars of where the tension points were and realize that small adjustments there would make a huge difference, say in how finances were managed or say perhaps, you know, how their conversations would go, that it would make a difference. And if they refused, if they thought, oh, well, this is totally, totally all gone, and in order for us to salvage anything here, I've got to change who I am totally, so I'm not going to do that. If there was that strong resistance, then it wouldn't happen either. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that all marriages should stay together and that divorce is somehow a sense of failure. I'm not trying to say that. But that small changes can often make a difference.
Yeah. Excellent, yeah. And then that makes sense. Yeah.
And it shifts the thinking from that, this relationship is over, to, oh, well, maybe there is something that we could do to change that, because I would feel better if this happened, mm-hmm. and then I would feel better about that person. I know there were there were many, many times when I was in the field doing that kind of work that there was that aha moment.
Yeah.
People mm-hmm. had that aha moment. I can remember one family that came to me who were struggling so hard, and the mom brought the single mom brought all the kids to therapy, and we had 4 or 5 sessions when all of a sudden one of the daughters who was resisting so much all of a sudden realized that they were coming because things were good and mom wanted to just make them better. She thought they were coming because their family was falling apart and it was a mess.
Yes. Oh yeah.
And so that the messaging is so important as well, and then everything turned around.
Right.
And it was amazing to see.
And sometimes what that means is the relationship has to shift. Sometimes you will see couples who will say, you know, we are not good together, so we will amicably, you know, separate and continue the relationship in another way down the road, in a different form, rather than, you know, going the nuclear route and trying to destroy the other person to win some kind of a victory over them. Because I think that will sometimes happen too, you know, where the relationship won't say stay as a marriage or stay as a tight, close nuclear family, and it has to move forward in another way that's healthier for both of them. Yeah, but again, that's a type of, maybe you want to call it adaptation or adjustment, or maybe you want to call it a type of repair, and I see that's significant too. Yeah.
Yeah, and we all have, as the two couples that are here, we've all made minor adjustments. Oh God, so many. Yeah. Over the how many years
of marriage, right?
50, yeah. 50 for you.
And yeah, you have to do it constantly, right? 40,
let's make a list.
For,
yeah.
5 for us?
Is it?
Yeah. Yes.
5 for us.
A long time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think you have to do that often in all of life, don't
Absolutely.
You? Have to make adjustments. Because it isn't just brokenness, it's trauma, anger, you know, there's some other stuff that's going on in the background,
it's grief.
Right? It's grief, yeah. So you have to sort of think about what are the adjustments that you need to make, right, in order for some kind of renewal or some kind of change in the brokenness.
It's such a seduction, isn't it, to want to totalize things mm-hmm. and absolutize things.
Yeah.
And perhaps that's the rise of popularism and the appeal of simple answers that politicians offer to complex socioeconomic issues.
Mm-hmm. Recent politicians. I'm not sure it's always.
Well, I think every politician to some degree tends to totalize.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Otherwise, they're thought of as wishy-washy and
stand firm. Yeah.
But I want to read something quickly, because this really hits home to me in terms of understanding where we're at today. This is by Hannah Arendt, who was a philosopher post-Second World War trying to understand, German philosopher, what the hell happened in Europe. And she has this to say: in an ever-changing, incomprehensible world, the masses had reached the point where they would, at the same time, believe everything and believe nothing, think that everything was possible and that nothing was true. Mass propaganda discovered that its audience was ready at all times to believe the worst, no matter how absurd, and did not particularly object to being deceived because it held every statement to be a lie anyhow.
Hmm.
Is Isn't that where we are now?
So, yeah, so everything's fake news. There's no reality. It's all fake news. It's all made up. It's all That's sad. And yet, if we again slow down and use critical thinking and look at our day-to-day experiences, even on a personal or interpersonal level, we realize that's simply not true. Everything isn't untrue. Everything isn't false. Everything isn't beyond repair or adjustment. Sort of moving in a bit of a different bend, there recently was a fascinating interview with Jonathan Toews, who signed with the the hockey star who signed with the Winnipeg Jets.
Yeah,
and in the interview, he talked, well, one of his mantras is, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And he goes through his personal journey and some of the adjustments he had to make. There was a serious physical adjustments he had to make, you know, going through this therapy to get rid of the inflammation that had post-COVID, or the COVID inflammation that had hit him. But he said there was also the stress and the weight he carried for many, many years, and he had to adjust, as well as sort of his mindset and his way to play. And the idea is that these were some major undertakings that he could do physically and psychologically and spiritually in order to resume or try to resume the hockey career. And he didn't know where it was going to go, but he says he had that sense that there was something there that he could approach and that he could tackle. And it's a fascinating interview because it looks like another one of these sports interviews where all you're going to hear is a lot of sports cliches, like, you know, yeah, I got to give 110%, and you know, we're all just a team in it together. And in fact, it's it's very
for the team.
Very different and very enlightening. So, yeah, and again, the idea that, you know, even though in his it looked from the outside that his career was totally broken and gone, and it wasn't fixable. He found that it was, but there were adjustments that had to be made. So,
yeah. And I think, I mean, that's an amazing example of somebody who took control of what they could take control of and made changes. And I think that that is also what we're talking about, is when we find those places, those particular hopeful places that are working and show the example of, in opposition to this grand catastrophic statements that go around, I think that that is something to grab onto and to work toward as well. So finding things that are doable in your space and in your sphere of influence, and taking baby steps towards them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah, I think my tendency personally is to catastrophize, right? Mm-hmm. And I have to continually remind myself, and you've done that, Signe, as well, many times for me, remind myself that catastrophic storytelling dissolves the boundary between truth and fiction. Mm. And makes despair sound like clear-eyed realism. Mm. Mm-hmm. And that just isn't the case.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, you know, speaking of that, I'm going to draw Elaine in here a bit. When I was working on my master's thesis, and there were some delays in getting it read, and it was coming down to the deadline, and it was supposed to be done by March. And in December, after I had submitted sort of a draft to my advisor, and there was a certain aspect that he said he wasn't very knowledgeable in, so he passed it on to another professor to look at it, get some insight and feedback, and the other professor was too busy to look at it. And so at the end of December, I get this message, no, this one whole section has to be reworked. And right away then it was like, well, all hope is lost. I'm done.
I'm not gonna happen.
I'm finishing it. And Elaine, what did you say to me?
I said, you are finishing it. I said, you're going to sit down and you're going to keep working at it, because a lot of sacrifices were made for you to get this far.
Yeah.
And you just can't walk away now. And you'd regret walking away.
Yeah, so I you said something about kicking my ass, too.
Yeah,
so.
I did.
So I had an option of addressing, you know, going through the pain of redoing that one section or experiencing the pain of you going after me.
Yeah.
So sometimes what we need is an outside voice, too, when our voice... You know, because we can be filled with despair and with negativity. And then sometimes an outside voice can make all the difference.
Yeah, I think so. And you got to repay me years later when I went to seminary. In the first couple months at seminary, there was one particular professor and I that did not like each other, I guess would be
you
a nice.
Clashed a lot.
We clashed a lot, and then I just gave up, and I thought I'm not going to sit. I was going to quit the class and walk away because I thought, well, I'm done. I'm not going to take this kind of abuse or whatever. And you know, I can't use that word catastrophize, but over dramatic would be a way I would use the language, right? And thought I am so done. And I came home and I said, Rick, okay, I'm done. He said, we moved. Three kids.
To Saskatoon.
To Saskatoon, yeah. So you could go to seminary. And I left a parish to start another one. And again, I'll remind you how many sacrifices were made.
That was sweet to be able to turn
it was
the tables.
So sweet. I know. I remember that, right? You're going to just figure out how to get through this class.
Mm-hmm. And you did.
But yeah, I think you constantly have to do that reframing in your life, right? To bring yourself down. I know that even in our own family system, there are at least three of us who make dramatic statements, or we have the over the top kind of response to something, and it always reminds me that there is one particular person in the family who manages to calm everybody down with just a very simple statement, very quietly said in the middle of all the rambunctiousness. And suddenly we're all kind of reframed a bit and get back on track, right?
Yeah.
And I love her for it, but, you know, it just is so funny how it sort of happens that way. So,
But it's reframed in a good way. The comment is a good way. It's not just like everybody calm down, which is a statement that rarely
happens. Yeah, it's like, did you think
really
about?
Helps. Really
helps. Yeah.
So in the political arena... Mm-hmm. And not to name names or anything, but so much is being asserted to be broken, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a seductive appeal. So how do we respond to that? And it is often conservative, and I don't mean that party-wise, but conservatives who tend to want to change things, and the premise before they can change it is to get everybody to believe that it's broken. And so perhaps one of the responses, and I'm reminding myself of this, is that everything's not broken, that there are some things that work. And to work on those some things is important. As an anecdote to this totalizing negativity that can come on every friggin' newscast, whether radio or TV or whatever. So it's not a matter of just turning it off. It's a matter of relativizing to some degree the totalizing tendencies that are coming at us continuously.
And trying to find those voices that are doing the opposite, who are finding that particularized hope. Peace.
Yes.
And building on that, I think there are those voices out there. And I think journalism is at, I don't think I know, journalism is at risk right now because they are on the firing line, in the firing line. And so those voices may not necessarily come from journalists, although some do. They come from other people who are doing podcasts or are doing other kinds of analysis and putting it out there. And those voices are there.
Well, I wonder whether, too, the attack on public radio, for example, in the States and here isn't an attempt to silence thoughtfulness and raising ambiguities about these totalizing assertions. like everything's broken. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's where we would find a nuanced discussion.
Yeah.
So nuance for some is intolerable.
And one aspect of that in terms of social and government extremism is this idea that you have to find someone to blame,
yeah.
to demonize. Blame. And often it's the minorities. Some minority is to blame for this. And they are the ones then you target. And that helps galvanize, say, maybe not the whole majority, but a significant amount of those who are not named as the enemy or named as the problem to come onto your side. And I think that's a piece that really ties in with this on the political side of it, that you know you're dehumanizing certain people in order to sort of make your case or draw supporters.
That's right. I think that's one of the things that I kind of watch for in some of that journalism, maybe, and postings or whatever, is the demonizing part, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to fall into that. It's very easy to fall into demonizing someone when you're attacked or whatever. But again, to think that through, right, and to sort of try to find that space where there is some evidence of renewal somewhere beyond that, right, and or there is some redemption there or something. To get to that point, right? I try to look for that, but it's not always evident.
So
it isn't always evident, and in fact, it's sometimes not evident at all.
Yeah, exactly.
And you really have to look or a very objectively think about what they're actually saying.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I can't even get through the newscast, and I'm gone. This isn't working for me. And they're just saying things to say things, and I just can't tolerate that. It's like a bullshit detector.
Or why aren't they reporting on this and this?
Where's the rest of it?
Yeah, like, where are the evidences of hope? Because they are of renewal, they are there. Yeah. We see them.
Yeah.
But why can't journalism see that? You know, like, because that's not what sells papers. That's
not
what
sells
news, right? You know, so they avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
So the truth. God forbid we talk about the truth. The truth is always very, very complex. More complex than any one of us would wish it to be. So Canada is not broken in any absolute sense.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what comes to mind for me is having spent a year in India and then coming home and the reverse culture shock of being in Canada again, you realize how wonderful Canada in fact works.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean there aren't many serious, complex problems at every level, economic, political, and personal, and in terms of racist sentiments and so on, in Canada. But we need to raise up the functioning components of our country. It does work, mm-hmm. and it's one of the most sought-after countries in the world for refugees to come to, and there's a reason why.
Mm-hmm.
Because we've got a functioning democratic system so far,
mm-hmm.
and the economy, we're generally very well off, every one of us, even those of us who might think
not
everybody. There are the impoverished, and that's the complexity of the issue,
mm-hmm.
and we can address that in many different ways and ought to.
Or do we have the will to do it too?
We
have the resources, and do we have the will?
But everything's not broken.
No, that's right. Yeah. Well, everything's not broken. There are ways. There's always a way, right?
Yes. Signe?
Yeah.
There's always.
Yeah, and maybe that's where we could leave that for today. It's just there is a way. We are not all broken, and our society, our nation, is not all broken.
Well. On that note, let me, because this came to mind too. that we are not all broken as human beings.
Yeah.
And I think what happens in theology at times is this same totalizing tendency.
Yep.
And I think the whole notion that Lutherans tend to emphasize of original sin can be a totalizing distraction. It's not that everybody is sinners to the core. It's that we are ambiguously constituted morally.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone struggles through that moral complex.
Mm-hmm.
But there is also the both and situation, both saint and sinner.
Sure.
That's another Lutheran.
Well, and that's the complexity, right?
Right, yeah.
And when you hear that, and when I heard that in seminary, I twitched my head going, what?
Yeah.
How can that be both and?
Yeah.
But it can be.
But it can be.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not being simplistic about it. It's leaving open the needs for all to understand
who
they are.
It's a dialectical way of thinking. It's a reframing dialectically, not one-sidedly.
Yeah, it's not leaving you in despair. It's pulling you towards the hope and the renewal, right?
Yeah.
But doesn't that just speak to the complexity of, I mean, you're talking theology at this point, but it can be applied to anything that we've talked about today.
Yeah.
It can be applied to politics. It's that we can feel many things all at once,
mm-hmm.
and we can experience something in many different ways, and our climate situation is very complex. Mm-hmm. It is not simple, mm-hmm. and it's not simply fixed. It's complex, and it needs to be thought about in its entirety, just as, you know, we need to think about all of those things that make us human, and we've talked about what it means to be mm-hmm. human before, but it is hope and despair at the same time sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And it is who we are.
And the attack on education, whether here or in Canada,
mm-hmm.
by whoever, I won't say who, that is an attack on complexity.
Mm-hmm.
And teachers who might ruminate in a complex way on social issues and share that with students is a danger to simplistic, one-sided, totalizing tendencies.
Yeah.
I think sometimes for some of us, complexity leads to, I don't know, my head's going to explode, so I don't want to deal with it. And simple answers...
It's woke.
Simple answers seem to be attractive then. You know,
yes.
I can think of trying to learn higher mathematics in first-year university and going, oh my gosh, this is just... Well, mind-blowing was one way, but it was also too complex. Now, that's not the reason I left the scientific field, but... I think that ties in, the idea that somehow complexity is very threatening, or it's too challenging, or it's too overwhelming, and so we want to gravitate to the simple.
Yeah.
But complexity is where we're at, and complexity, I think, also can lead us to know that there are many, many approaches mm-hmm. to fixing, to repairing, to mm-hmm. adapting, to adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All is not broken.
Yeah, and all is not lost.
There must be a song in that vein. All is not broken.
I'm sure, yeah.
If not, let's write one.
Yeah. Would it be a country song? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely.
No. Tugging at the heartstrings.
Yeah.
Oh. Good.
On that note.
Thank you so much for joining us today, and we hope that this has filled you with some thought, and perhaps you have your own thoughts on this whole matter. And so... Be imaginative, be creative, be hopeful, be safe. Thank you for joining us today.
Thanks for spending this time with us on Seniors in the Building. If you enjoyed today's conversation, we'd love for you to follow us. Join our growing community and keep sharing in the stories, wisdom, laughter, and life as seniors. Until next time, stay curious and seek hope. You can find us under Seniors in the Building on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and possibly wherever you listen to other podcasts. Our email is forseniorsinthebuilding@gmail.com. That's the numeral 4, followed by Seniors in the Building, lowercase, all one word. We'd love to hear from you. You can also leave a review wherever you listen to your podcast. We'd like to thank Thomas Waschenfelder for our logo design, and Amy Waschenfelder and collaborator Natasha Franzblow for our musical jingle for the podcast. We really appreciate their input and the support of all of our families in this endeavor, for listening, for reviews, for tech support, and love.